Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. I'm excited about today's show, even though it's not a long form episode. What we've done, we've gone back and taken clips from previously released episodes on particular topics and points. I think they're powerful. I think they're worth listening to. So thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. If you're an individual, business person, family, whatever, and you've been abused by the financial system, bankruptcy, you know, foreclosures, bad deals gone wrong,
litigation,
less than positive experience, and you get exposed to the infinite banking concept, my God, it's Katie, bar the door. Mm-hmm. You will learn because it resonates. You see that the controlling the banking function is the most important thing I could do financially.
Yes.
At least secondarily, the most important thing you can do is maybe whatever it is, you're using your God-given abilities and talents to produce an income and that experience. And let me say, too, that I have a lot of clients that have had less than favorable experiences, whether their own cause or they had help from agents, life insurance companies, or whatever, financial institutions, you know, that they have gotten involved with the infinite banking concept sometime in the past. And then whatever happened that wasn't good. You know, a couple of them go down to zero, lose everything. Some of them go right past zero and owe more than you lost. Mm. Oh, yeah. In other negative situations like that. Then to come around and after going through those types of experiences, it's like, oh my gosh, that was the best thing I ever done.
Mm.
Maybe I didn't know how to keep control of it. Whatever the case is, that was one of the best things I've ever done. And James, here's the background. You know, how do I do it?
Yeah. Yeah. Learning by contrast. When you've got that prior negative experience and you get the simplicity of like just an easy policy loan request, you know, or a little 2-page DocuSign form to get the larger loan or whatever it may be. It's like, huh? You know, it's like almost deceptively simple.
Yeah. James, don't you want to borrow any money? Don't you need any money? Mr. Businessman, we have a perfect line of credit. It fits all your needs. Every bit, you know, you can go do the things you want to do. I mean, the banker, God bless them, they're almost a glorified salesperson selling loans.
This is the inverted world, right? The complicated horror show that is conventional finance is made to look easy and attractive and alluring, right?
Yes.
But then over in life insurance,
seductive.
Yeah, you know, you got to go through all these calls with me in an advisory phase and do strategy, read a book. You know, this illusion of all this work, really, that's not, right? But illusion of all this work when the reality is there's just an elegant simplicity. So it's the inverse, right?
Is.
Over here in IBC, looks hard, looks weird. A lot of scammy life insurance agent people on the internet telling me to buy life insurance when in fact it's elegant, simple, private, tax preferred, better for you, all that. And then over there in conventional finance, the illusion, I'll just sign here, it'd be so easy. When in fact, let's convert that open line of credit to a no, or that indebtedness on that line of credit to a no.
What? Why does that ever happen? What? I'm gonna control the, wait, you have a $100,000 line of credit, but your balance is 50, and now in the next, that's your new limit, 50. And you can either pay that off in the next 60 days, or then we'll convert it to a time payment. Mm. How convenient. What's collateralizing that?
But look, the last economic recession went 15 years ago. So nothing bad's going to happen, right? We haven't had a bad... Things have gone well the last 15 years.
Relatively, yeah.
So what's wrong with that? You know, I just... The bank's never going to call notes due. That's never. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt right there.
Oh, yeah. It's like, and then it's the same as, you know, the non-recourse loan. When I say everything that you own is collateralizing, backing up your John Henry, which is a personal guarantee to the lender. And then, oh, wait a minute. I know they over-collateralize. I know they do. Of course, they have to. Character, collateralization, credit, you know, all the C's of banking. If you want a $20 million loan, right, $10 million, $2 million, $2,000. I'm just saying I'm using that number because actually, you know, actual case. But it doesn't matter what the number is. I'm not trying to throw out big numbers. If you want a $1,000 loan from the bank, tell me how much the value, what is the value of the collateral they're going to require?
At least $1,500.
It's going to be damn sure more than $1,000. I love it. You know, yeah, I got a $20 million operating loan. I got $35 million of assets collateralizing. Oh, wait. And then who valued the assets, right? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And did they give them full market value? And then how much did the bank, the lender, discount that for a future value? Because you know they didn't say, oh, you have $25 million in assets now, collateralizing that $20 million loan. We'll afford you a 3 to 5% modest growth rate in value. Bull, you know.
People don't think about these problems.
But it's just fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Yeah. Yeah, because look, there's never a problem. There's never a problem until there's a problem. Then when there is a problem, that's when assets start swapping hands.
Yeah, companies that couldn't go get traditional lending would lend on their inventory.
Yeah,
because they didn't asset, have, yeah.
Yeah, asset-based lending is like, listen, your assets got to at least 25, 50% over the loan amount. So we want to over-collateralize.
Yep. And yeah, then, you know, for those of you that don't, you know, kind of know what that is, that is the very basis of that. You know, we would look from a lending standpoint, we would go and look at a company's inventory, not their what they call slow moving inventory, which would we would look at, you know, between zero and maybe 60 days. If they can turn over that portion of inventory, we would lend on a percentage of what they could turn over and create an accounts receivable or money coming in from their end consumer. So we would lend on
that. What was that ratio back then? Do you remember?
I think it was maybe, it was between 50 and 60%.
The immediate thought to my mind was 50%.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say at max, it was 60. Yeah. But I remember in the middle of the summer, just sweating like crazy in warehouses because I'm counting stuffed animals because I don't know if, you know,
proper accounting.
Yeah, proper accounting off of Dolphin Road in Dallas. And I'm going like, I don't know if anyone's familiar with that area, but you don't want to be there when the sun goes down or while it's up and I'm in their warehouse. So yeah, just to give you an idea.
Yeah. That's funny. So it's like over collateralized on the loan, and then when they sign their John Henry, everything that they own or thought they owned is
now the bank's.
Yeah, collateralizing.
Yep.
Beyond that little bit.
The lender always gets paid first.
Yeah, I believe that all of the markets are manipulated, but they're not to be necessarily avoided. You know, 100%, you know, it's like, I'm not opposed to the markets. I'm not a pro at all. I mean, I'm a capitalist, and what amount of free markets that we have, I think it should be taken advantage of. No question. So I'm not opposed to the market. Right. But if I want to put all of my money, all of my capital exposed into the market, exposed to risk, and then rely on a predictable, stable income in retirement, I'm like, yeah, I'm out. That, no.
Well, one thing we may want to touch on about the recent collapse of FTX, the cryptocurrency thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So this is
that was always going to go up too, right?
And intellectually, it kind of makes sense. I mean, if there's some global standard, whatever, everything agree on, but no one does. But what appalled me is that how much of supposedly smart money went into FTX. This guy, I don't even know if he had his finances on Excel or anything. Like, I don't even know if they had any QuickBooks in there. I think he had the back of a notepad, all right? But he raised close to $1 billion. He had institutional investors like Thoma Bravo, private equity firm, Sequoia Capital, okay, SoftBank, these giants, and they didn't do squat for due diligence.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And you know, Forbes and Fortune, he was rated $30 billion. But my point is that you and I have a different perspective because, you know, the money we help for people, we don't want them to lose it. these people are just gambling with other people's money. And it's really gambling with other people's money when you don't have a responsibility to preserve it.
Yeah.
And then, and this is what's happening. And then if they blow it up, the system, like they did in 2008, then, you know, they want us to bail them all out.
We were starting to make progress with getting some credit started with conventional banking. And then we started the aircraft rental business. It's called Freedom of Flight. And then it started all over again because we can't get credit on the old business, of course. And so I was so frustrated with trying to be responsible and start these businesses with my husband. He's my hero.
Great guy.
Yes.
Aircraft mechanic, how many years?
Oh, goodness. 35 years, 40 years.
So these relationships with the bankers, or the non-relationship with the bankers, have been going on for some time.
Yes. And so I just started searching the internet and YouTube, searching for a way to just get capital for businesses that were up and running. And then I came across Banking with Life, and I started researching because it started to make sense in so many different ways. I tend to be a person that has to get five uses out of something, just about anything. And I kept going round and round and learning and asking myself questions and researching what made sense. And, you know, family is so important. And to be able to provide that security for my family in the event of my death, that's huge. But to also be able to accumulate cash value at the same time as a part of the same life insurance policy, amazing. And earned interest, or a dividend, is my understanding. I've only been doing this for, as we mentioned, a year in August. So I'm not claiming to understand all about how it works, but I understand that there's a dividend on associated with the cash value, plus the death benefit for my family, plus being able to take the loans out that don't show on my credit report to run my businesses, plural, whichever business needs it, no matter how long it's been open.
And every business needs capital.
Yes.
Every business. That's pretty cool. So keep going. I don't mean to interrupt you, but.
And I'm beginning to understand, in my mind, conceptually, how cheap money is as a word. It's capital. And controlling the capital.
I love that.
And maintaining our vision and moving forward cross-generationally, to have all of that come together in whatever you want to call it, your own bank, life insurance, whole life insurance policy. Conceptually, so far, I'm convinced that it's what's right for me and my family.
How long, you know, when you were searching for, you know, some type of banking for businesses, you know, how long did you discovered or stumbled onto the idea of becoming your own banker, Banking with Life? How long did you listen and kind of research and read about that before you made a decision to, I'm going to put this into action and actually, you know, reach out and say, I want to buy a life insurance policy to become my own banker.
We all only have, you know, one life, and it's not like we're going to get your father's age and all of a sudden not need capital, you know.
Right.
So I'm just saying, properly structured is more than just a percentage weight to a base premium or a PUA premium properly structured is completely dependent upon what the client is doing, where they're at, where they want to go, their timeline, their age, their ability to pay a premium, you know, the duration of that premium. And then putting that together in a fundamental, basic, solid way that won't blow up in the future, right, knowing that the future is unknown.
You know? So on that, you know, one of your previous podcast guests, I think Mike Rivas, liked what he said about that, you know, his banking system, his policies, that's where he wants the least amount of risk. He wants to accumulate capital and then deploy strategically. That may have more risk, but he's doing that knowingly and informed, right? And I think that's part of the getting correct structure, yeah, making sure that it stands the test of time and that this is the least amount of risk. This is your foundational structure.
Yep. I love it. And I say it all the time or repeat it all the time whenever he said I'm the worst salesman in the world. I love that. I'm like, thank you.
So. I enjoyed that. You know, I felt like you're not selling me. I feel like you were just teaching me, and I appreciate that more than somebody trying to sell me something.
Yeah, sure. Well, I appreciate you saying that. And so the mechanic series that Ryan Griggs did helped you a lot. And
well, now that it's available, I said, wow, I wish that was around 5 years ago. I've had some of my clients even go look at it, and they say, yeah, that's really great information. And you know, we talked about these things, but having a place to go back and relook at it was really beneficial to them.
Yeah. So when you talk to your friends, are they pretty skeptical? I mean,
so I think when I first started this 5 years ago, a lot of people were skeptical, and they're kind of, you know, what are you doing? This sounds weird. And I'll talk about some of my examples there. But now, all of a sudden, within this last year, I've seen a flip. I think the word's getting out, and people are getting more smart on this stuff, and people are getting more educated and knowledgeable, and they're seeking me out now. They're seeking, like, this knowledge out.
Yeah. Are you more confident?
I am. I'm way more confident just by using this and practicing it. Every time I use it, it's gotten better and better.
Yeah. So it's worked out like you expected, or?
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, you know, now I value more the intangible stuff you can't really see in an illustration.
Whenever you look at a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy in the illustration, the growth is coming from two components, right? There's a guaranteed cash value increase every year because the base face amount policy must equal the face amount at age 120. So on a whole life policy, straight whole life, no riders, I pay a premium. There's zero to very little cash value in the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. But that cash value must equal the face amount at age 120. So by contract, that cash value in the base whole life insurance policy is growing every year. So that's one component of the accumulation, right? They call it, they talk about a cash value interest and all of that. But that component, which is guaranteed, and the non-guaranteed dividend, the combination of those two create the cash value accumulation. Okay. Now, instead of, you know, and it's promoted all over, you know, social media that, well, if you have a 5% dividend and a 5% loan rate, it's a wash, right? Well, wash is exactly a universal life term. They've used that in the universal life industry to say, oh, it's a wash loan. So it's language that's particular to an industry, and then particular to products, and then kind of misconstrued in general. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The combination of, you know, the dividend, non-guaranteed, the cash value increase, that creates the growth. Which I already said, I'll go back to the 5% dividend and a 5% loan rate. Is it a wash? No, it's not. And you take the increase in cash value that on a guaranteed basis and then the dividend on a non-guaranteed basis, and then you can calculate an internal rate of return on a life insurance policy. And that's the number that you should know and you should use to compare with all of the other things that you do. Okay. And then it's the same thing with the note, though. You know, y'all have put out money, right, and on property. Now you're selling the property and you're carrying the note, right? Well, there's cost. You have cost in all of that operation. And so the net is going to be an internal rate of return. You know, your outflows your incomes over whatever time period minus your expenses, you get a net internal rate of return on every deal. And so if you, and my encouragement would be to think in terms of internal rates of return on each deal, right? Especially in the real estate. But then you can do a more equal comparison with life insurance than any other asset when you look at the internal rates of return. So that makes sense, kind of. And so I'd get around about if whatever the net internal rate of return is on your deal and the internal rate of return is on your life insurance policy, that's going to be your total internal rate of return on the whole deal.
Okay.
And so, but typically the life insurance policies today, and we're in 2022, you know, we're in a low interest rate environment just coming out of it. So we're at a low as far as the dividends are concerned historically. And then we're also at a low as far as interest rates, right? If they're variable interest rates on loan policy. So, you know, my anticipation or expectation would be that as interest rates go up, dividends are going to go up as well. But if you look at today, you build an illustration and go out into the future, you know, the internal rate of return is going to be a net equivalent of about, you know, 3.5% to 4.5% in general. That is the internal rate of return coming from the cash value accumulation, guaranteed and non-guaranteed components, right? Well, and that's about it. And you can calculate yours, you know, every one, you can calculate an internal rate of return. But it is going to go up or down because we're looking at a life insurance policy illustrated today, and it's going to change into the future.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.